And our episode today will be discussing how corruption affects young people. Insights from the 2019 Afrobarometer report. Step Up Nigeria's podcast is an initiative built to create awareness of governance issues that highlight the cost of corruption and its impact on service delivery. It is also aimed at shaping the discourse on topical issues as it relates to the fight against corruption. The Afrobarometer revealed that for many citizens in African countries, paying bribes for basic services is all too common. Though the report highlighted many interesting issues, on this episode, we will only be discussing why it is that young people and poor people are more likely to pay bribes than older people. We hope you enjoy this interview. Hello, and welcome to Step Up Nigeria's podcast. We're glad to have you listening to us today. And on our episode today, we'll be discussing how corruption affects young people. Insights from the 2019 Afrobarometer report. I'm Feremi Adeola.
I'm Ijeoma Ogun.
I'm Nomso Okeke.
And I'm Zainab Haruna.
And we're the Step Up Nigeria team and we'll be having this discussion today. So Transparency International released the 10th edition of the Global Corruption Barometer for Africa this year. The Afrobarometer revealed that for many citizens in African countries, paying bribes for basic services is all too common. It also reveals that while most people in Africa feel corruption increased in their country and their governments are doing a bad job at tackling it, majority also feel optimistic that they as citizens can make a difference in the fight against corruption. So for my first question about young people, I think it's great that all of us in the room fall under the African Union Youth Charter definition of youth so we can relate to it. One of the key findings of the report was that young people are more likely to pay bribes than older people. Why do you think that is the case?
Okay, I think that's not far-fetched because we young people of this generation or maybe the old generation as well, I don't know, we want to get things as fast as possible. We want to get things done at our own time. So even when we know things take time, well, it's when we're ready to get it done and we want to get it done now. Mm-hmm. So, and sometimes I think it's not like we like to pay bribe in itself. It's just because that's the price we have to pay for wanting it fast. Mm-hmm. So, and as well, it's also obvious that it's young people that want to get things done for the first time.
Yes.
They don't know what the process is. Yes. They also don't have an idea of how exactly things are supposed to be done. Like maybe our parents that probably renewing their driver's license or their international passport. So I think that that's why we young people are falling into that category that we tend to pay bribe more. We want to get things out of our way. We want to get, and if we have to pay something to get it at the time we want to get it, we really do not mind. And we're the ones that do not have time as well. Like some of us are working, some of us cannot leave our work to queue up in certain places. So we're just like, okay, but if I can as well just pay my way to get this thing in the shortest possible time, why not? That's why I think we fall under that category.
Okay, not so.
Well, I look at it more from the perspective of the fact that the younger people are just, in fact, younger than the older people. And by that, I mean, because of the fact that they're younger, those in authority who make them pay these bribes, or the people who they pay these bribes to, can exert some type of pressure or influence on them based on their age. And it could also be because of the fact that they might be more easily intimidated. So the younger people might be seen as more easily intimidated by the older people. And I know it's more of a thing in Nigeria where, you know, people tend to see the older people, like they give them more reverence and respect. So it's like, Baba, you know, like they don't want to approach them a certain type of way because they're concerned about how it might come across. But then for younger people, it's like, ah, this one's a small boy, this one's a small girl. Like, you know, they can't say anything, they can't do anything. So they then corner them into a position where you have to pay this bribe or such and such and such would happen to you. So that's just my perspective on it.
Okay, I also think that there are, or at least there might be, some social norms that have been passed down to the young generation of today that has made paying a bribe acceptable, in the sense that a lot of young people have grown up in Nigeria and in Africa where they've seen their parents pay bribes to police officers, to healthcare providers, for electricity, the police, the judiciary. They've basically grown up in a culture, in a country where people pay bribes to get out of trouble, people pay bribes to fast-track the system, people pay bribes as gratification. And so growing up in a system like that, it only seems natural that those are the norms. That's what we find, that's what is the new normal. It's now acceptable. That's the culture young people have grown up in. So to say young people pay bribes now is because maybe the older generation might have had an option at their time, but now it seems like that is the only option that we have. Another point there might also be, from your point about people just not being respected based on age, I also feel like young people don't have influence, in the sense that older people, when it comes to service delivery, might know people who already work in those agencies. They have a cousin, an uncle, an old secondary school, university friend that they can call up when they want to get something done quickly. But younger people generally don't know as many people in those agencies that can fast track processes or bypass the rule of law for them. So I think that's quite interesting. So another finding was that poor people are twice as likely to pay the bribe than wealthy people. What factors have ensured that the most vulnerable in society are extorted? What do you think, Zina?
Well, I think by the very definition of more vulnerable, it means, the term vulnerable means you're likely to be exploited. So we're looking at people, poor people are a section of this society who have low bargaining power in how they relate with people within society. So in essence, they are not on equal footings, really, because in that instance, you would see that the person asking for bribe has a certain amount of power, and that's why they are able to demand for that bribe, because they have something that the other person wants. So they are asking for a bribe so that they can, you know, get something. So poor people don't have a bargaining power to counter that power that the person asking for bribe has. And so I think really, in terms of, and it's likely you'll find this in every society, the most exploited people would be those vulnerable people. So poor people, minority groups, those will be specifically targeted for corrupt practices. Yes.
Okay.
Basically, it's from my perspective, it's strictly just an abuse of power by the law enforcement. Because these people, like she said, you know, they are in that situation, they're in the position of power where they can exert their will on these people of a lower social class, or, you know, just they have less power available to them. Whereas for the richer people, it's always been a case of, like, if I say something, if I stop this guy, I don't know who he knows, I don't know who he can call, I could lose my job, someone could throw me in prison. So there's this underlying power dynamic that rules a lot of social interactions in Nigeria. And it's not more obvious to me than when it involves, like, law enforcement and the poorer people, because then it's like the power they can't exert over the richer and higher ups in society, they can now take it out twofold on the poorer and the lower people in society.
So if I get you correctly, you're saying, you know, law enforcement or people in this authority basically say, you're poor and I know you have no other way out but to pay a bribe to me to get what you want, and that's why this
basically
is exploited. Okay. So I also think that in some aspects of the law, obeying the law might be expensive for poor people to pay. And a good example I will give is, if you're driving on streets in Nigeria, there are a lot of things that the average Nigerian driver has to have. You have to have your driver's license, car papers, you have to have a seat cushion, you have to have a fire extinguisher, you have to have 4 good tires and an extra good spare tire at every point in time when you're driving. And the truth is, the average cab driver or person who is just trying to get by and just happens to have a car may not at all times be able to afford a working fire extinguisher, a seat cushion, good tires, and an extra tire. And in that case, I think law enforcement is also aware that it is expensive to acquire all those things at every point in time. And so they can, and usually do pick on people that they know when they stop them down, they don't have those things in there, they don't have those things in place. They know they've already flouted the law before they stop them. And so I think that also makes poorer people easier prey. But also I think there's like an absence of efficient, redress system. Basically, like, they also know that when they extort poor people, there's really no place to report the thing that was done, and so they know basically no one is going to hear about it. There's no redress officer or redress office or some grievance person that can take up the issue, and they're convinced that because that happens, then since there's no one else to report these issues to, them, why at all should they not extort the poor people? So lastly, I'm thinking from the report as well, what measures can be put in place to ensure that the young and the poor do not remain easy prey for corrupt people?
Okay, I would say awareness of processes. If it's really clear what exactly the processes are, like, for example, I need to get something done, I need to get my national ID card, I have a website I can go to actually check and see that this and this are things I have to do, this is how long it takes. So I'm able to plan ahead, and if I need it earlier, then I know when to apply for it. But I think presently, even though those things exist, everybody just thinks that, oh, it doesn't work that way, or the systems online or that has been pasted in the office doesn't work that way. But if there are strict measures to say that, okay, these are the processes to get this done, and over time they've stopped that process, everybody will say, oh, if you want to get this, this is the process. And then you know that you have an option down to follow the process. So I would say that that is very important. And then service charters as well, public documents to inform people about particular information and services in offices, also online, will be one way. Then grievance redress services to where people can make complaints, people can actually speak without, how do I put it, knowing that whatever they complain about will be addressed.
Yes.
And even if what you're speaking about is, if the complaint is because a public servant has behaved one way or the other, they know that that is going to be addressed. A public servant is probably going to be punished for doing that way. It will also make public servants sit up as well, that, oh, if I do this and I get reported, am I losing my job? Do you understand? So
yeah.
If all of that puts in place, it will give both the public servants that orientation that they have to do things the way it is to be done, and they cannot collect it right because they might lose their job if they do that. And then on the other hand as well, we young people and poor people also know that if I don't follow the process, there's no way I can get this thing. So I better follow the process so I can get it as fast as possible. And then if I want to get it faster, if that comes with a cost, let me know so that I know I'm not paying a bribe, I'm just paying a cost to actually get it faster and quicker because I need it.
Okay. So yeah, I like the point you just made. I'm aware that the Civil Society Legislative Advocacy Center actually just, they have a mechanism in place called the ALAC, which is like a mobile hotline for reporting. But I also agree that, in your point, it's beyond civil society organizations having a reporting mechanism, but that the government agencies themselves should have grievance offices and desks and
yes,
for reporting. Okay. So I also think the government should utilize, one, existing research, and also use statistical data and federation reports and things like that, and corruption assessments to create safeguarding policies for people who are vulnerable. For example, there's existing research by Transparency International, agencies like CERAP that have already done corruption performance surveys in different sectors in Nigeria and across Africa. And these things have results of occurrences of bribes paid. Some reports even go as far as stating the drivers of those bribes being paid. That kind of information should help the government create safeguarding policies that would be able to protect people who are vulnerable and easy prey for corruption. And the government on its own should be able to have research centers who are daily looking into how this affects the lives of Nigerians and use the results of those reports and assessments to ensure that people who will be easily preyed on by corrupt people are safeguarded in one way or the other.
I think for me, it would be more around also things around using technology and automating processes, especially within public services. So if we automate processes and we remove the human factor, then we're substantially going to limit the instances for corrupt practices to take place. So we've seen where other countries automate their own processes and we've seen how it works there. So possibly we could replicate that here. Also things around anti-corruption education as well. So telling people, speaking to people people about where they stand, civic education around what their role is in tackling corruption, how they should report it when it happens, what kind of avenues they can take to get what redress mechanisms are available and things like that. And I also think the media has a very key role to play in doing this education. So the media can talk about what the media can also educate people in the public and create awareness around the impact, the negative effects of corruption in society, and how people can, where people can go to get more information, and how they can, you know, take stances against corruption. So these are some of the things that I also think can help.
Okay, thank you, Zainab. Thank you, team. This was an interesting discussion to have. And if you haven't checked out the Afrobarometer report for 2019, we believe that you should. So thank you for a good conversation, everyone. For our listeners, please remember to follow Step Up Nigeria on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, and on YouTube at step_up_Nigeria. We hope you enjoyed listening to this episode, and we hope to see you next time. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.